T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
By Graham, time for Kizer on the screws. Kumaro to the 40-yard line and knocked out of bounds by the terrific cornerback out of Alabama, Marlon Humphrey. 22-yard pickup, good throw and a first down.
Aledio.com Sports Station. Two Wisconsin guys talking Wisconsin sports in the morning. Broadcasting live on the Radio.com app, 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, The Fan. It's time for Chuck and Winkler in the Morning, live from the Bryant and Stratton Bobcat Studios.
Yes, it is Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakery from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletics Studios. Ryan Horvath filling in, Kevin Holden filling in, Chuck and Bart will be back. They weren't fired or anything, they'll be back. Bart enjoying some family time. Freem's out on the golf course this weekend. 414-799-1250 asking you if you have any issue with Aaron Rodgers sitting out last night. Ryan Wood from PackerNews.com and the Green Bay Press Gazette will join us at 8:20. We're going to talk a little bit about him with him and see what his takeaways were from that meaningless preseason game last night. You could also tweet at us, 105.7 FM, The Fan. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and anything you missed today and every day, you could always find at radio.com on that beautiful app right there. Tweet us at 105.7 FM, The Fan. Like Ron did, he said, every year Aaron is out of sync with his receivers early on, so he extends plays, gets sacked, and injured, which is not completely false. Not completely false. And I guess that's the one issue I do have with Rodgers, you know, because I'm not going to lie, as my role is Aaron Rodgers apologist here at 105.7 FM, The Fan, and so I was saying the same thing. I don't know that I really need to see him play a whole lot in the preseason, but I do want to see him at least play one quarter or one series, just because that's a great point. Every year, they get off to this slow start. I don't know if that fixes anything if he does play a quarter, if, you know, he comes out and torches the Bears for 300 yards in the first half. But at least I'll feel a little bit better if he does struggle, because he did put the work in during the preseason, I guess, right?
Something. That's it. It's just, even if it's a visual, even if it's just for the rest of his team to see him out there, to see 12 under center, you know? I think there's a point somewhere, and I don't know if that's in practice or in a preseason game or whatever, but I want to say there's a point somewhere where you'd want to see the visual, right? Where
right. You
break the huddle and you look, and there's 12 under center, and there's Devontae. And there's Geronimo Allison, and there's MVS, and there's Aaron Jones, and there's Jimmy Graham, and you go, oh, there's a lot of talent right here, you know? Like, it's, you don't have to unfocus your eyes and forget about, you know, Darius Shepherd as a number two receiver, because he's been impressive, but he's not a number two receiver. If you can make that happen at some point, even if it's for one drive, just, to me, there's a visual component to it. It's just that if I see it, then I'm like, right, this is what I'm going to see in week one.
Right. As far as takeaways go from last night's game, 414-799-1250, tweet at us at 105.7 FM, The Fan. Craig Matthews tweets in, and he says, speaking of guys who can't stay on the field, Aaron Jones continues to be made of glass. Time for Goot to make a bold move that defines his tenure, proves he's in charge, and brings Melvin Gordon home.
Ooh, wow.
Bodie is our Wisconsin Badger, what's the word I'm looking for here? What are you, our analyst, or are you our Badger backer?
Groupie?
I think Cardinal and White Insider would probably be the terminology on this station.
I love me some Melvin Gordon. Love him. I think he's probably, I would go top three back. I'm going to have to probably say Zeke is the best back in the league. I mean, that offense, the Cowboys offense, is designed for Ezekiel Elliott.
Right.
I love Le'Veon Bell, but we haven't seen him on the field in 14 months, so I have no idea what he looks like, if he's in shape or whatnot.
And we'll be talking about that at 9:45, and what we missed, we have some news on that.
Ooh, look at that tease.
Wow.
Look at my man, up and coming in the business.
Well
right
done.
Nick Bodie, you can follow him. What's your Twitter name?
At NickBodie41. A lot of great sports content.
Give him a follow. So, Bodie, I'm a big Aaron Jones fan. And I think that there's too many holes on this team. Does Melvin Gordon, if you do make a move, which isn't going to happen, but let's say that the Packers did make that move, would you put them atop the NFC North? Like, is that the move? Like, the Bears going out and get Khalil Mack, that made them the favorites in the NFC North last year. Would Melvin Gordon to the Packers make that big of a difference?
I think it would make more of an impact this year than it would have last year, because LaFleur's got a very run-heavy system. Like, all reports that I've heard were that the Packers are planning to go into this year with three tailbacks on the roster, which I think is kind of shocking based on how much he wants to run the ball, that it's just going to be the two Williams brothers and then Aaron Jones. You know, I love Melvin Gordon. I don't know that they need to go out and get him. It seems like a bit more of a committee approach. We saw with LaFleur, they have a Deion Lewis kind of guy who's a pass catcher. So really, if they were going to go get one Wisconsin tailback, I would actually want James White, because I think what they're missing right now is that third down specialist. They've got the two Williamses. They can both bang it out. But the thing I'll never forget is 2016, the Packers had Ty Montgomery, a receiver, starting at running back, and we were dead last in the league with receptions out of the backfield. They never have a back who can catch it. That's what they need. MG3 could give them that, but I'm not sure he's worth the money.
James White, Super Bowl hero.
Multiple times over.
Won me a lot of money, actually. I took a prop a couple years back, and it was just James White to score a touchdown after he scored how many in the previous Super Bowl? I'm with you. I would like James White, and I agree. A back that could catch passes would be a great thing. I'm not ready to say Aaron Jones is made of glass. I just feel like they're being cautious because he's always banged up. And you don't really need him getting injured before week one, because then you're relying on Jamal Williams. And while I love Jamal Williams, I don't think he's an every down back.
Right. Yeah, that's not the territory that you're in right now. And in fact, the truth is Aaron Jones has done some good things in the league, but he's not like automatically dependable either. Yeah. That's the other thing.
Yeah, I don't like guys saying, like on this station especially, everybody last year, oh, Aaron Jones needs to be carrying the ball 20 times a game. No, he doesn't, because that's not today's NFL. He's not Barry Sanders. He's not Ezekiel Elliott. That's not how he's built. You could use, I like using Jamal for the short yardage situation. And what I like about Jamal Williams, because I know that there was people that were down on him last year, why is he getting the carries? Why does McCarthy love him so much? Well, the reason McCarthy loved him so much was because that wasn't a running offense, and Jamal Williams actually pass blocks.
Right.
Whereas Aaron Jones, he's gotten a little bit better, but he still struggles in pass protection. Right. So there's still a spot for Jamal Williams, and what I like about him is he gives you everything that Aaron Jones doesn't. So I think it's going to be a two-headed backfield. I'm fine with the backfield.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to ask you guys, because it seemed Rich Eisen makes the joke every year around late October or November that we've now reached the point in the NFL season where the Packers will start someone we've never heard of at running back. You know, is it Niall Davis on Thursday Night Football? Like, who is it going to be? Do you think it's insane to go into this year with only three tailbacks on the roster? I mean, they might have two fullbacks, but with a run-heavy system, like, are you guys comfortable with that?
Not 100%, no, because if it was Eddie Lacy, early Eddie Lacy, and you had three on the roster, then that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, not like, you know, that
not gif Fat Lacy.
That gif of that dog running, yeah. That where every the fat was coming down into his eyes.
God, I love Eddie Lacy, though, man.
Oh.
He's one of my favorites of all time. I was at the wild card game against the Niners where we were chanting, Eddie, Eddie. But yeah, I'm with. So you'd be fine if, like, that's your back, that's...
If Aaron Jones had done a little more, if that resume was a little thicker at this point in his career, I'd feel better with three. I'm just, my worry is that he's being held out as a precaution right now, but what if he's being held out later because, you know, he's hurt a little bit?
Yeah, and with his injury history and the way that we view him as being fragile, it's just tough to watch him sitting out these games, because you just want to see him get like 3 to 4 carries and say, okay, this is the Aaron Jones that I'm going to be taking in the first round of my fantasy football draft.
Yeah, there is that element, and that becomes harder to do as the years go on, by the way.
And I'm with you, Bodie. No, I would not be comfortable with that, but I'm also not ready to give up on Dexter Williams after one bad game. And I've been on the Dexter Williams train just because I'm a Notre Dame fan, not only because I'm a fan, though, because I'm just a fan of his game. Like, Deshaun Kizer went to Notre Dame, and I think he's awful. But Dexter Williams, I mean, his burst, and when he hits that hole, like, he's a burner. Like, he could take one to the house for 65 yards. Problem is he just can't catch balls out of the backfield. And in LaFleur's offense, it sounds like you're going to have to be able to do that. But, like, do we trust Aaron Jones catching balls out of the backfield? I really don't trust Jamal Williams. So I would be fine if you go on the streets and you pick up another running back. I just don't know who's out there. Like, I don't want Bibbs back. You know?
Again, that's that name you've never heard of. The Niall Davis thing is just fantastic, because that's, you know, in the preseason you have these guys that do so much and then they disappear. Like Miles White was so huge in preseason,
yeah,
for three
White.
Or 4 years in a row, and then literally that was it. You know, he'd be done in September.
There was a point where people thought Niall Davis was like the future for the Kansas City Chiefs. I remember, I think it was Jamaal Charles's last healthy year. There were a couple drives that year where Charles would kind of take him down to the 5 or 10 and he would get tired and they'd pull him, and Niall Davis would have like three carries, 2 touchdowns. People were like, oh man, this guy, he might be the future. And like 2 years later, we're picking him up off the waiver wire,
yeah,
in October. Like,
well, Like, you could get good value on some of these old dudes. Like, who would have thought that Adrian Peterson was going to be so good in Washington?
Right?
Washed up Adrian Peterson. Like, Frank Gore is 98 years old, and still every year he's rushing for 1,000 yards.
Yeah, he just grinds it out. Like, he isn't aging. I mean, he got to his level right in the middle of NFL running backs in terms of that, you know, the production, and he's still right there. He isn't gone anywhere. He hasn't dropped off the table.
414-799-1250. You could also tweet at us at 105.7 FM The Fan. It is Chuck and Winkler. No Chuck nor Winkler. Ryan Horvath, Kevin Holden from CBS 58 filling in. September, my favorite month. I know that last night was a meaningless preseason game, and it was one of the worst preseason games, and that's saying a lot, that I've ever seen in my life. But I'm excited because we're here in August. It's almost September, so we get some meaningful baseball with the Brewers only a game out of the division. We got postseason baseball around the corner. Football season, also hoodie season. I could ditch the shorts and the t-shirts and wear my sweatpants and hoodies to work. And coming up September 25th, it's time for the 13th annual Perkins Restaurant and Bakery's Fan Charity Golf Outing. And it's going to benefit Give Kids the World at the beautiful Western Lakes Golf Club in Pewaukee. It's your chance to golf with us bums here from The Fan and other local celebrities like Kevin and like Steph Summers and all these fun people that people like a lot better than us. Just $125 for a great day of golfing. I'm just making people up. We'll provide breakfast, lunch, and dinner from Perkins, Robert's Specialty Meats, and Saz's. Get all the details now. Be sure to sign up. I would suggest before Monday at 105.7fmthefan.com so you don't lose your spot, because everybody's going to be wanting to get in the foursome with guys like Leroy, former Packer and Badger Gary Ellerson.
Drew Burgoyne.
He gets you. Is he golfing?
He's golfing. We got three in that event.
So who do you got?
Burgoyne,
okay.
Bill Walsh, our main anchor, and Scott Grotzky.
Every time I hear Bill Walsh, I get excited. And don't get me wrong, like, I love Bill Walsh.
Yeah.
He does great work at the news station. But when I think Bill Walsh, like, I'm trying to talk about the West Coast offense.
There's a guy on NFL Network, a reporter named Randy Moss. Do you know who I'm talking about?
No.
But he's not Randy Moss.
It's an older white gentleman, yeah. And so every time they go, and he covers the Minnesota Vikings. That's like one of his regional. So they'll go, "We now go live to Minnesota with Randy Moss." And I like hear that from the kitchen. I sprint in, and he's like, "Okay, thanks, Stephanie. Well, Stefan Dixie." I'm like, "Who is this joker? I need cash money, man. Come on."
Yeah, I want the real Randy. And the weird thing is, because Randy Moss is an analyst too. So when there's two of them and there's this one, you know, not the Randy Moss that you're expecting, not the dude that almost ran over a police officer and mooned the crowd at Lambeau Field, but
and caught 23 touchdowns in 2007.
The greatest statistical season by a wide receiver that'll never be beaten.
Ever.
Ever. Greatest football team ever to not win a Super Bowl.
No doubt.
So 414-799-1250, we'll get back to some Packer talk. We're going to talk some Brewer baseball, but up next, we'll talk with our green and gold insider, Ryan Wood. What are his takeaways from that craptastic game last night? Does he think Aaron Rodgers should have played? Chuck and Winkler here on The Fan.
Chuck and Winkler, 105.7 FM, The Fan. We are halfway through the Packers preseason, which means we're just a couple of weeks closer to the regular season opener. Packers,
thank God,
said the entire state of Wisconsin. Packers and Bears, that'll be less than 3 weeks away, but we'll analyze this second preseason game against the Ravens. PackersNews.com, it is Ryan Wood joining us here on Chuck and Winkler. Ryan, all right, so we're through that game at least. I don't know, maybe this is a broad first question to ask, but what did you learn that you didn't know before that game?
Not much. I think I'm in the thank God group of less than 3 weeks now to week one. Let's do some real football, because that was pretty sloppy on both sides. Not just the Packers, but, I mean, the best play of the night, like literally the highlight that NFL Network entered their package with was Lamar Jackson's touchdown that didn't count. So if that gives you an idea of what we saw last night, it wasn't much on either side. But, obviously the big news, Aaron Rodgers with the tight back, did not play. It's going to be really interesting. I asked Matt LaFleur after the game, do you need to get him snaps? Do you need to see him in this offense before you take him to, you know, Chicago, best defense in the league, Soldier Field? And he left the door open that might not happen. You know, he said that he doesn't think it's necessary. It's preferred, but not necessary. So that'll be interesting, because you'd probably feel better going into that week one game at Chicago if you'd actually seen the quarterback, because what we saw, I mean, there were nine other starters out there, but that's not the offense. The offense is when the quarterback, especially this quarterback, is on the field. And so we really haven't seen the offense yet.
Ryan, and we were listening to that answer, and it kind of seemed, I don't know if I'm reading into too much, that Matt LaFleur wanted Aaron Rodgers on the field last night. Do you know what happened? Because we didn't find out he wasn't playing until like an hour before kickoff. Do you think LaFleur wanted him out on the field, and Rodgers just said, I'm not going out there? What went down with the back tightness?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't speculate on that. I don't know what happened behind the scenes. I mean, certainly there's a tight back, and he was held out for precautionary reasons. Matt LaFleur said that, you know, because I asked, is this something that's going to linger into the next week?
Right.
And he seemed pretty confident that it wouldn't. He said that his back was even feeling better on Wednesday night. And look, if there's any tight whatever, you don't put Aaron Rodgers out there in a preseason game, especially against this defense in Baltimore, which has a lot of intricate stuff that they do in their defensive front. They get pressure after the quarterback. You don't expose them to hits. I mean, that would just be silly. So, you know, I get that. What's going to be interesting, though, is next week they're in Winnipeg, and they're going to be on turf. They're not going to be on grass. So I don't know. I mean, the decisions aren't going to be getting any easier to put them out there in a preseason game.
And you're having to make decisions about wide receivers, and you're doing that based on Tim Boyle throwing them the football. So we get excited about what we saw from Alan Lazard and what we see from Darius Shepherd and that sort of thing. But is it more difficult to gauge who should be your receivers that'll have Aaron Rodgers throwing you the ball if what you gauge is not Aaron Rodgers throwing you the ball?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they do get some practice time, so they're able to see that in practice. And some of that chemistry stuff and the timing stuff is not dependent on live tackling, you know. So that sort of thing can kind of be made up for in that setting. But I think in general, just the machinations of the offense, the timing, the chemistry, the tempo, all those things, and then obviously the audibles and the extended plays and those things too, those are all predicated on who's the quarterback, and especially with this quarterback, those are all pretty unique.
Absolutely. We're talking with Ryan Wood, PackerNews.com, here on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, Chuck and Winkler. Ryan, looking at the two quarterbacks last night, and DeShone Kizer, he'll show some flashes, but still the same issues. He's staring down receivers, and then Tim Boyle last night threw some ground balls. In your opinion, who should be the backup quarterback, or should the Packers maybe consider going and grabbing somebody off the street? Because I'm not seeing a whole lot that I like from either guy right now.
Yeah, both guys have left the door open. You know, I think midway through preseason, both are very firmly on the bubble still, which means that either could make it or neither could make it. I mean, I do think that the Packers will be scouring the open market to see if there's a guy to bring in at the end of camp. Now, that doesn't mean that there will be a guy to bring in. I mean, there's got to be a guy in the open market that is worth doing that with. Ideally, he would have some knowledge of this you know, system that LaFleur runs, that McVay runs, that Shanahan runs out in San Francisco. Because you don't want to bring in a guy totally cold at that position September 1st that's never run the offense before, and he's got to learn catching up. So I think that area is just beginning. I mean, that battle is just beginning. There's a long way to go there, and I don't know what the finish line looks like.
Interesting to see, too, you know, there are a couple of different positions on this team where performance in these preseason games is a little closer to what you're going to have to see in a regular season. Middle linebacker is a little bit of that, I think. You know, defensive line, you saw a little bit more against Baltimore than you would in the other games. I mean, you see more of the starters in this one, and not that you would think any differently of a Kenny Clark or whatever, but with the support that they have behind him, the defensive line is, it's got to make you at least feel pretty good, right? It's a bigger strength than it has been.
Yeah, I mean, everything defensively is so vanilla last night. I think I have to go back and check to make sure I didn't miss a snap, but I think on the first series, I think they were exclusively base, which you could probably count literally on your 10 fingers all the times this season that the Packers will have a series where they're exclusively base defense.
Right.
So that gives you an idea. I mean, schematically, you didn't see much at all. You did see the three outside linebacker set on the second series and their dime, which I think they're going to see a lot. I think you're going to see a lot of Darius Smith, Preston Smith, Rashawn Gary on the field together this year. There's a lot of athleticism. Those guys can put their hand in the ground too, especially at sub and get after the quarterback from the inside. So, you know, it was just so vanilla. You know, clearly Lamar Jackson had some highlights, made Darius Smith miss on a sack. And the defense had some decent moments. I thought that the first series, I thought that's a pick that Jair Alexander needs to make.
Yes.
It's not an easy pick by any means. I mean, he's falling out of bounds, and I talked to him after the game. He's like, hey, maybe if I played receiver, like, yeah, that's a tough play. But if you want to be a Pro Bowl caliber cornerback, the type of cornerback that Jair Alexander wants to be and frankly has the talent to be someday, that's a play that you have to make. And so there were some of those left on the field as well.
Talking with Ryan Wood, PackerNews.com. Ryan, we're talking a little bit about the defensive side of the ball, and I joked that Za'Darius Smith, on that missed sack, he fits right in. I saw a lot of Nick Perry, a lot of Clay Matthews, but not joking around, Rashawn Gary, what are you seeing from him? Looks like he's kind of struggling. I don't want to read too much into it. It's only preseason, and he's a rookie, but what are your early thoughts on him?
Yeah, kind of like you said, don't want to read too much into it. It's only two preseason games. But the reality is that he's not flashed yet, mm-hmm. And he's flashed a ton, especially one-on-one in practice. I mean, he's made a ton of plays, and his athleticism has been really impressive one-on-one. It's all about that 11-on-11 setting that we haven't seen him flash yet. I think he had one tackle last night, played a long time. He was playing into the third quarter, whereas Darnell Savage Jr. was out with the rest of the starters after two series. Need to see him flash. He hasn't done it yet. It's only been two games. Will he do it? We'll wait until he does.
Right. Last question for you, Ryan. My guy Dexter Williams had a really rough night last night. His job isn't in jeopardy, is it?
No. Gosh, no. No, I wouldn't go that far. Look, right. I mean, who would take that job?
Right.
You know, like,
right.
Like, what did we see from Trey Carson last night? It was 6 carries, 9 yards. Look. Dexter Williams has some development to do. There's no question. The drop pass, you know, and Matt LaFleur's talked about, you know, not dancing in the backfield and hitting his landmarks quicker, which is just run this outside zone scheme is predicated on. But if you look at it strictly from a talent standpoint, from a speed standpoint, Dexter Williams has a lot more talent than the other running backs we saw last night. He's not Aaron Jones. He's not Jamal Williams yet. But there is a base of talent there to build on that we're not seeing from a Trey Carson with 6 carries and 9 yards. So for that reason, I think the Packers, you know, they spent a draft pick on him. They're going to be plenty patient with them because the talent is clearly there. And you see when he gets to the hole, he gets to the hole really, really quick. So there's a lot to like. I think it's just a matter of letting a young guy develop and you know, get adjusted to this level.
Thanks a lot, man. Enjoy your weekend.
All right, take care.
That was Ryan Wood. You can find his work at PackerNews.com, the Green Bay Press Gazette, and right here, 105.7 FM, The Fan, our green and gold insider. And he joined us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019? Then look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local, common-sense lending to your community since 1935. Had to get that Dexter Williams question in there. I was a little bit worried because I'm already worried because he doesn't catch balls out of the backfield. Then when he's putting the ball on the ground, not showing the same flashes last night, like, I really expect him to be a player. Like, obviously, like, you look at the Chicago Bears last year, and I know that Matt Nagy didn't love Jordan Howard in that offense, but Jordan Howard was going to be your number one back, but they had to get Tariq Cohen on the field, and I feel like almost like that's what Dexter Williams could bring to this offense, just because when he does hit that hole, he's a burner. He could take off for 50 to 60 yards and burst for a touchdown. I see a lot of Aaron Jones when I see Dexter Williams that mm-hmm. rookie year when we just wanted to see what Aaron Jones could do. And so I'm not ready to give up on a rookie just because he had one rough night, but it was a really, really rough night.
It was, yeah, and it's the second week of the preseason with a whole lot of stuff that doesn't look anything like it's going to look in the regular season. But again, that word flash is a big word because you get to this point and you think, who flashes? Who did you see who flashes? And it was a surprisingly few number of people all over the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about a couple of receivers, the Shepherds and the Lazards and those guys, but not a lot of people flashed in that game.
No, and I laughed when Ryan brought up the only highlight that they could bring up on the NFL Network last night was the Lamar Jackson thing, because I'm trying to pull highlights myself, you know, for radio purposes, and I'm like, I got a Jake Kumerow 15-yard grab. I got
dot.
Brewers pick up a win last night without even stepping on the diamond. How are you feeling about their chances at winning the NL Central? 414-799-1250. Tweet at us, 105.7 FM, The Fan. Chuck and Winkler, back after this.
2-2 with the bases loaded and one out.
Oh, my God.
Deep to right field. Way up there and way out of here. Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam, Bryce Harper.
I think Larry Anderson or whoever the color analyst was there speaks for about 80% of Wisconsin when he went, oh, my God, when that ball went right off the bat of Bryce Harper.
I'm going to villainize myself really quickly here.
Yeah.
I'm all four of the Brewers winning the division, just a game out after the Phillies come back and beat the Cubs last night 7-5. But your boy had a little bit of scratch on the Cubs, minus 132 last night. It's 5-0 in the bottom of the eighth, so I'm like, you know, paying attention to that craptastic Packers football game and the Cardinals. Next thing you know, that grand salami gets served up. Bryce Harper hits it out of the park. I don't think it's landed yet. And I lose like $300. So
Chuck and Winkler, 105.7 FM, The Fan. That's Ryan Horvath, who could use your donations this morning. After.
Yeah, so I tried to make up for the loss and bet some Korean baseball this morning. I took the over and some team that just lost.
Wait, so. You took the over? You didn't just bet like team, you know, this team to win or this team to lose. You are betting overs.
Overunders too, yeah. Yes. I actually took a first 5-under on that. So I took the first 5-under and then the total over, and I somehow lost both.
Do you know the names of the teams involved?
No. I think, like, Matt Merton might be on one of the teams, but other than that, I can't name you one player.
You don't know the names of the teams.
Let's move on to something. Can the Brewers win the division? 414-799-1250. We go out to Franklin and talk to John. John, what's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. Yeah, as much as I think Harper's a tool, I was loving that home run last night. Always good to see the Cubs going down in flames. What are they, a game and a half, a game out? Yeah, it's on. And somehow they're going to have to stitch this thing together pitching-wise. And I don't know how they're going to do it, but they're going to have to find a way to do it. But what the Brewers are going to have to do, they're going to have to kick Kane down towards the lower middle part of the lineup, keep Grissom or Buehler or somebody up there in the front of this lineup leading off, and they're going to have to start hitting with runners in scoring position. That stat has got to pick up. If that stat does not pick up, we have basically no chance. We have hung in this race for two reasons. One, the futility of the other teams in this division, all of which were expected to be upper echelon National League teams. None of us have done what we thought we were going to do. And we have played well enough to hang in there. We're here. What happens now? We're in control of our own destiny. Let's start hitting the baseball. Let's start putting some runs on the board so we're not clinging to these one-run leads, all of us aging ourselves, begging the bullpen to come through and hold on to these leads like we did last year, because we don't have the bullpen we had last year, obviously.
It's the truth.
Thanks for the call, John. Appreciate it. And all great points, especially the runners in scoring position, man. As good of a year as Mike Moustakas is having, and he's an all-star, the numbers are alarming with runners in scoring position. And then, I mean, you could say that's Major League Baseball in general because it's all solo homers. Strikeouts, yeah. Solo homers, strikeouts, solo dong. And so I feel like that's just kind of the way. But at the same time, yeah, you're not winning this division unless that number improves.
I think the Brewers, you know, as sabermetrically aware as they are, as analytically aware as they are, I still think that's a number that does have to change. I mean, you bring up a great point. You could have a runner at second and less than two outs, or a runner at third and less than two outs, and the infield still shifts, right? And there was a time when you then adjust and you hit the ball the other way, or you find a way to get that runner in, but it doesn't happen because everybody's thinking big flies, yeah. Right? Not that you want to take him away from that concept a lot, but if you take him away from that concept a little and you take a short percentage, a small percentage of the time and turn those into RBI singles, I think you can put together more RBI singles than you can solo homers. I feel confident in that one. And that to me will change. If it changes it by half a dozen runs, that might make the difference between making the playoffs and not making it over the course of 40 games.
Yeah.
If you score half a dozen more runs. And the other point that John made is if it's not 2-1 every time or 5-4 every time Josh Hader's in the game, where every, you know, fastball that doesn't hit its exact point at the top of the strike zone doesn't scare you to death, that's a good thing, too.
No, I agree. And I feel like the theme of this show today could be back tightness, because does it concern you a little bit, the Yelich back injury? Because he was 1-for-10 in the series against the Twins. I'm not paying attention to that. The only reason I am paying attention is because I really need him for fantasy baseball.
Right.
Like, I'm down 5 points right now, and I only got
playoffs.
In the playoffs, so I really need him to get it going this weekend against the Nationals.
Yeah.
Are you concerned at all maybe about the power numbers just because you think back issue? Like, I'm watching Anthony Rizzo for the Chicago Cubs last night. He hits his third homer, I believe, in 2 homers, and he's dealing with the same thing every year. The lower back flares up for him. So last year, Yelich, you know, missed a couple games with the back tightness. This year, a couple games with the back tightness. It seems like something that could linger. Nothing too serious. You're mainly just being cautious with it. But does it scare you? Because you really need him, I feel like, to throw the team on his back like he did the final month of the season last year.
He's got to lock in. And then, yeah, if there's a little tweak like there was in Pittsburgh and he loses 5 days, you know, they were very lucky, the Brewers were. Fortunate, that is. They executed well. And with Yelich out for almost a week, they got the job done, right? The Brewers won games without Yelich in the lineup. I don't think you can guarantee that will happen every time. Like,
right.
You don't want to depend on...
No, you can't.
Yeah, right? Letting Yelich be on the sideline and you're trying to win games. So, yeah, it's a little bit concerning. I thought his swing in the Twin Series was a tad off. His timing is just... You know how you can tell a great, great hitter... But he's just a little bit off of that timing, right? He's just not seeing the ball quite as well as he was earlier. It's not that Yelich is bad. It's not that he's in a slump. He's just not, you know, there's just a little notch missing from that Yelich, right? Which means he could get it back, but it just wasn't there in the Twin Series.
Well, and he has such a violent swing. Like, I'm watching that at-bat from Bryce Harper last night, and I said to my wife, actually, we're sitting there watching that game, and I said, the Phillies are going to win this game because I saw it on that first cut. He fouls off the first cut, and I said, he's either striking out here or he's hitting a grand slam because he was not looking for a base hit. That swing was so violent. And it's funny because then I had to do a little bit of research because you see the Cubs blow a game like that. You're scoreboard watching, so you see the Cardinals lose, and you say, oh, my God. Everybody was calling in the Dunn Club last week, and I was the voice of reason telling Chuck and Bart, this team is going to lose 8 straight. Oh, no, they're not. They are. That's the way of baseball. The Cubs are going to lose 6 straight. No. The Cubs are too good on paper. Man, they got Kimbrel now. Ben Zobrist is coming back, but they can't win on the road. Paul Goldschmidt, as good as he is, he's not going to hit 9 homers in 10 games. He's going to go on that tear, but then he's going to have a month where he struggles too. So I said, this division is very winnable. But I'm watching that Cubs game, and I'm like, man, they sat in the dugout like 5 minutes after that grand slam. And you would have thought that that team just lost in game 163, or that team just lost in the wild card against the Rockies again, because they looked like they just got punched in the gut. That's what they look like. So then I had to do a little bit of research, because that Packers game sucked, which is a ringing endorsement as I want to go back and talk about it here in 10 minutes, but it sucked. And so I had to do some research. So I checked Jesse Rogers, who follows the Cubs. He's their beat reporter for ESPN. And I wanted to check his Twitter last night to see what the guys were saying. Anthony Rizzo was asked after the game if that was the toughest loss of the season. He said, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had a 5-0 lead going into the bottom of the eighth, 5-1 going into the bottom of the ninth with one out, and you lost that game, 7-5. Then they asked Derek Holland, who blew the save. He gives up the grand salami, and he said, I looked at the pitch. It was a great pitch. You have to give credit where it's due. Tip your hat to him. I have a problem with that. A great pitch, it hasn't landed yet. How is that a great pitch? Tim Allen, host of the baseball postgame show, you'll hear from him tonight after the game. He always says the same thing. If it's a great pitch, it wouldn't be over the fence. There's no such thing as a great pitch that leaves the ballpark. And that was a meatball served right down the plate. My whole point is, the Cubs, there's something that's not right in that clubhouse right now. And that loss last night could be the kind of loss where everything just falls apart. Like, they could go to Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh stinks. They're 20 games below 500, and they could get swept this weekend. And then we could be talking on Monday about a Brewers team that has a 2-game lead in the division. Like, I don't know what the Cardinals are going to do this weekend, but everything is right there. You're in a better spot than you were last year. So I continue to go and scroll through Twitter. Everybody in Chicago wants Joe Maddon fired. They say he overmanages, he gets too cute, plays the numbers too much. And then I go on our Twitter page at 105.7FM The Fan. You could tweet us. You could follow us. And I see the same people saying the same thing about Craig Counsell. So who is a good manager in Major League Baseball right now? Because everybody has an issue with their own manager. Like the Yankees, they have a problem with their manager because the starting rotation sucks. So Kevin, I want to ask you this question. Joe Maddon or Craig Counsell? Joe Maddon has won a World Series, but he did it with a lot of talent and a big payroll. Craig Counsell, I argue, does the most with less. Like, he doesn't have last year's bullpen, so he has to make tough decisions and unfortunately play matchups. The lineup is great, but guys aren't hitting with scoring position. Who would you rather have as a manager, Craig Counsell or Joe Maddon?
Well, it depends on the team, I think, right? Because Craig Counsell is a great manager for the team that he has. I think Counsell gets a lot from the guys. You know, you're talking about maximizing, and there's something to that, right? There's a connection with the players, and there's getting players to buy into things. I mean, picture what's happening in the baseball world right now with the changes in what you're asking players to do. We just talked about with a runner at second, you don't think RBI single anymore. You think two-run homer, right?
Right.
So you have to get a player to buy into that. You have to get pitchers to buy into usage of certain pitches. You have to get them to think about things like spin rate, right? This is a different world baseball-wise. And sometimes you got to bring... Look, baseball is not exactly the most receptive to change sport in the history of the world, right?
No.
So you got to bring some dudes along who have been a little not receptive to change, and you got to help them change a little bit. Craig Counsell does that better. Joe Maddon, to me, is a better big stage manager, and it's only because he's been there before. You saw 2008 with the Rays.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, to me, made Maddon just an incredible manager, because that Rays team... That Rays team was the equivalent of one of those NCAA teams that was too young to understand it shouldn't be winning. Remember, you know that principle where you get some team, some 5 seed in the tournament, they're all sophomores,
yeah,
and they don't get it. They're just blowing through everything. They don't understand. You're not supposed to be on this stage winning right now.
Right. And see, that's my point about Joe Maddon, though. Right? I think he's a great manager, but I think he's a better manager with a younger team.
Yep.
The year that Chris Bryant got called up, and he got called up late because they wanted the extra year of control with them, right?
Right.
Like, they weren't supposed to win that year, and all of a sudden they got really hot. They made the wild card. They went all the way to the NLCS because the Cardinals that year won over 100 games. I can't mm-hmm. remember what it was, like 103 or 104 games.
Right.
They beat that Cardinals team, and they went to the NLCS. They got swept by the Mets because Daniel Murphy hit like 7 homers in that series, and nobody expected the Cubs to be that good that early. Like, they were beginning the rebuild. You brought John Lester over. Then the next year, you get John Lackey. You spend the money, but you still have young players. I don't think they were expecting to win that early. Javi Baez, Anthony Rizzo, Kyle Schwarber, they were all like 23, 24 years old. Chris Bryant was technically a rookie at the time.
Right.
And they won the World Series. Then the next year, they kind of regressed, and you thought it was just a World Series hangover, but it's really just like a lot of those guys just didn't get better. The problem with the Cubs is they're all looking for one pitch. They still can't hit off-speed pitching. They're all looking for four-seam fastballs and swinging for the fences.
Mm-hmm.
So Joe Maddon was great with that team because they were all young guys. And like you said, with that Rays club, I think his message was, you're not supposed to be here right now. This is the Cardinals division. We're the underdogs. And he was great with that young team and that rah-rah manager. Now those guys are all veterans, and I think the message has grown thin. I think guys are tired of it. And I think maybe the Cubs will be better off without Joe Maddon. Whereas Craig Counsell, he's a player's manager because he's a former player. He sticks up for his guys. It's very rare, like even when Travis Shaw was struggling or Zeus was struggling. I remember like finally after like 3 months, he came out and he was like, hey, Zeus needs to be better. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't do that because he is a former player. He's a player's manager.
Right.
And Madden's kind of the same way. So I see a lot of similarities between the two. But I just feel like Craig Counsell is the perfect manager for this Brewers team. And I don't understand why he takes so much heat, because I think he does a great job for what he has. Because you don't have the payroll, you have a great lineup, and guys just, like, it's not his problem that guys aren't hitting in scoring position. Like, what more could he do?
So I think the answer to your question is this. The Maddon of the 08 Rays /16 Cubs, greater than current Craig Counsell, greater than current Joe Maddon.
Yeah.
So Maddon is, at some point, depending on timing, better and or worse than Craig Counsell.
I'm just trying to figure out if Joe Madden's an overrated manager and why Craig Counsell's so damn underrated.
Craig played, he was a gritty player, and I think guys buy into it, you know? And I also think there is a leadership quality. They both possess it in different ways, but they both possess this leadership quality because you can't just... You can't just manage. We're going to get philosophical. You can't just be a manager. That is one of the least appropriate terms, because a good manager is actually a good leader.
We're going to talk more Brewers baseball with Bill Schmidt from the Wendy's Big Show. You can catch that show 2 to 6 today and every day here on 105.7 FM The Fan. He'll join us in about 10 minutes from now when we come back. Brewers just a game out of it. Do they have a shot to win the Central? Chuck and Winkler here on The Fan.
Chuck and Winkler, 105.7 FM, The Fan. Tonight, Brewers and Nationals in Washington, D.C.
Nationals are hot.
Nationals have a better record than anybody in the Central. We get real caught up in this three-team thing, right? Mm-hmm. And we think that the Cardinals and Cubs and Brewers are the toast of the National League. The Nationals are a mile and a half out of first in their division, yet their record is better than anyone in the Central.
I feel like what the Nationals are doing this season is really bad for players looking to get that $400 million, $500 million deal. Do you agree or disagree with that?
No, I 100% agree with that. You know what they are? And I'm reaching back here. I'm doing that probably too much lately, back. 2001 Mariners. You know where I'm going?
I was going to go somewhere else. You go there first.
A-Rod signs for $3 billion in Texas, and Randy Johnson signs, and Ken Griffey Jr. goes to Cincinnati, and they're like, oh my God, they lost three superstar players. They're going to be awful, and they won more games than anybody.
I was going to say also the St. Louis Cardinals when they parted ways with Albert Pujols.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because at the time, I was like, that's craziness. Albert Pujols is the greatest hitter I've ever seen in my life.
Yep.
Next to Barry Bonds. Tony Gwynn, maybe.
Right.
But I was like, what are they doing? And they said, you're not worth the money, and then they won a World Series without him.
Yep.
And I feel like that's kind of, I don't know that the Nationals are going to win a World Series, but I think that they're a better team without Bryce Harper.
The crazy thing about this team, first of all, they set themselves in position to succeed without Bryce Harper, which was brilliant on the part of that team. You know, they went out and spent money. You know, they developed Strasburg and then signed Patrick Corbin for $1 billion, whatever. I mean, they spent a lot of money. Just wasn't on Harper. But the other thing that's happening with the Nationals that could make them just ridiculously dangerous as this goes down the stretch is they are having a historically bad season from their bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
Their starters have been terrific. Their offense has been terrific. Their bullpen has been a dumpster fire. And they went out and acquired, like, I don't even know how many guys, three or four or five at the deadline. They just basically, any reliever that was out there.
Anything will take, right.
So think about if that bullpen comes together. Like, the Nationals might join this conversation. Juan Soto, superstar. That's a outfielder there.
Trey Turner.
Oh, yeah, total superstar.
I mean, that's what they did is they set themselves up to win with young talent, like controllable young talent. And they threw an offer out to Bryce Harper. And he thought he was lowballed, and then they never even threw another offer out there. Like, he said nope, and they were like, well, that's what you're getting. And yeah. I like that way of thinking, though, because Bryce Harper, I mean, and he's a great player, but he's also, what is he going to give you? A .252 batting average. He's going to take a lot of walks, which is good, and then you'll get some brilliance like he got last night, the Grand Slam, but I think that's like 24 or 25 homers. I just don't know if he's worth $400 million.
Right.
You know, I don't know that Machado's worth it. And now the Chicago Cubs are going to have to make the same decision because Chris Bryant, who they already offered an extension to, he turned that down. How much are they going to be willing to pay him? I wouldn't be surprised if Chris Bryant is a New York Yankee here in a couple of years. Like, they get that extra year of control, which was smart why they didn't bring him up right away. And that's what, like, when we look at these prospects and you're like, man, we got to get Kesson here up and we want this guy up, you always have to look at it from that standpoint. Like, you want that extra year of control. But just going back, I feel like the Nationals, like, every year they had the rotation because you had Scherzer, you had Strasburg, and then you had Bryce Harper, you had the lineup. I felt like they were like the Mariners growing up when they had Alex Rodriguez and Ken Griffey Jr. The Braves, even though they won the World Series, like, every year you could have argued that they should have been better because of that rotation, Maddox, Glavine. And then Chipper Jones, Andrew Jones. And it's just like every year they were predicted to win 110 games and win the World Series, and then they would just falter in the postseason. And that's been the Nationals. And I feel like now that they let Harper walk, this could possibly be the year that maybe they do win a playoff series.
Scherzer has been hurt a couple of times this year. He's been on the IL a couple of times this year. So that's a big part, right? You're going to, if the Nationals are going to be pennant contenders, National League title contenders, he has to be there in September and October. That's not an option. He's got to be there.
He does.
But if you put Scherzer there and Patrick Corbin is there and Steven Strasburg is there and they've got that lineup, dude, that's a dangerous baseball team.
Right, and the thing is, as bad as your bullpen sucks, when you get to the postseason, you got three guys right there that could go 7-8 innings.
Yep.
Then if you just develop a closer out of the four dudes that you just picked up,
right?
Like, you set yourself up for a great position. But
somebody.
We don't want him to get hot, and we're hoping maybe to put the ice on that a little bit. We'll preview that series coming up with Bill Babytow Schmidt. You can hear him 2 to 6 on the Wendy's Big Show. Also co-host the post-game show with Tim Allen. You'll hear that tonight after Brewers and Nationals. 3 hours in the books. One more to go. 414-799-1250. Still time to jump on the show. Tweet at us, 105.7 FM, The Fan. Chuck and Winkler here on 105.7 FM, 1250 AM, The Fan.
T
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.